It is Friday, June 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the special counsel reportedly investigates U.S. President Donald Trump and his son-in-law. President Trump will tighten the U.S. policy toward Cuba.
Cuba, since the Obama changes, has become even more repressive.
And singer Shania Twain releases a new single, Celebrating Life. It's all ahead. These appear to be anxious days at the White House as President Donald Trump indicated by Twitter this morning that he's under investigation for obstruction of justice. He also used Twitter to criticize his Deputy Attorney General, Ron Rosenstein, who appointed Robert Mueller as special counsel to tackle the investigation into possible Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election. Trump tweeted, "I'm being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director, witch hunt." Well, meanwhile, the Washington Post reports Mueller is also looking into the business dealings of Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who is one of the president's top advisors. I'm joined by White House correspondent Steve Herman. Well, Steve, you know, the significance here of Trump's apparent investigation for obstruction of justice. You know, this is for a president to be investigated for this. It's pretty serious.
It is very serious. And each day the president seems to take to his favorite social media platform. And according to a number of members of Congress and national security lawyers, is digging himself even deeper into the mess because these tweets become part of the investigation and could be seen as evidence of obstruction of justice themselves.
Now, apparently, California Senator Dianne Feinstein, I believe, issued a statement today criticizing Mr. Trump for that.
Yes, and she's also warning that he should not move ahead and fire the special counsel, Robert Mueller, saying that would be a very bad move on his part. And behind the scenes, a lot of Republican senators are making similar declarations as well.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of comment about that. Is there, are there concerns, I guess, that Trump might do that?
There's smoke, whether there's fire or not. Some of the people that we know do have access to speak to the president directly, have come out and either said that this is something that's being bandied about in the West Wing of the White House, or have said that the president seems to be thinking about this. And most of the voices out there in the mainstream say this would be disastrous, not only for the investigation, but also for the presidency itself. But there are voices on the right who feel that, as the president stated, this is a witch hunt, the background of some of the lawyers that the special counsel is bringing in have an agenda, have backgrounds with the Democratic Party. But that may be a smokescreen in itself, because if there is something that comes out of the investigation, then they can discredit it.
Oh, apparently Mr. Mueller is assembling quite a high-profile, I guess you could say, legal team.
Well, this is where it is turning into a bit of an uneven playing field for the president, because he has these lawyers now arrayed potentially against him, just a tremendous amount of legal brains and firepower. And then he has his own personal attorney, someone that he has used for many years with his New York State real estate dealings, that really does not have experience in this particular arena. And as you know, law is a very specialized field, and you don't hire someone who deals, for example, with traffic accidents to defend you against some sort of obstruction of justice charge.
Well, Deputy Attorney General Ron Rosenstein, he issued a statement saying that Americans should exercise caution before accepting as true any stories attributed to anonymous officials. Is it known what he meant by that?
No. When I saw this last night, my jaw dropped and I scratched my head, as I think many of the other reporters in Washington and people around the world did when they were reading this, why he would suddenly say this or make any comment whatsoever, what it was about, what he's specifically warning about, remains a mystery. And there's all sorts of theories as to whether this was something that was ordered by the White House or the Deputy Attorney General is doing this as some defensive measure. But he has, one way or another, put himself into this quagmire as well. And now there's a speculation that he may have to recuse himself as well from any of the Russia investigation.
And meanwhile, the President Trump's transition team, which is the team that helped him to begin his administration, they've been ordered to preserve Russia-related materials.
That, I don't think, is a surprise because there is an investigation and you do want to preserve all the documentation. A lot of this could be very routine and doesn't necessarily mean that there's any specific evidence that the president did anything wrong. But we know that the special counsel has an obligation to look under every rock, so to speak. And this would also be necessary to clear the president as well.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Steve. That's White House correspondent Steve Herman. Well, also joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Well, Andrew, there must be a lot of reaction to all of this.
There is indeed that tweet coming out talking about the witch hunt, getting a lot of, as Steve mentioned, people shaking their heads, scratching their heads, questioning exactly why this was tweeted out. But we're seeing a lot of reaction amidst all these investigations and everything that's going on. An anniversary today, June 16th, marks the two-year anniversary of Donald Trump's announcement that he was running for president. So Trump supporters are reveling in the past 2 years. Of course, the big accomplishment was getting elected president. Even amid these investigations, they're still supporting their candidate turned president. Trump opponents are kind of taking stock of the past 2 years, looking at some of the missteps in the first few months of the administration and citing some of those instances. And on both sides, we're seeing people express the same sentiment. It feels a lot longer than 2 years. It feels like it's dragged on for quite a long time after a bruising campaign season and a very busy start to the Trump administration. So lots of talk about that. And as we were just talking about outside, The Daily Show here in the U.S., the news comedy show, has opened the Donald Trump Presidential Twitter Library, showcasing the president's tweets, of course, that is his chief communication channel that he likes to use. So they have opened that, kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing for their show, but getting some attention on social media, the Twitter Presidential Library. On a more serious note, a very bizarre court ruling in the U.S. state of Massachusetts could have major implications for social media. A woman by the name of Michelle Carter was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter after she texted a man that was her boyfriend a series of tweets urging him to kill himself, and he ultimately did. This is the first instance where someone has been convicted of a homicide for sending text messages and being liable because of that. Now, this could have major implications for cyberbullying and online harassment on social networks, and it also has a lot of implications for free speech. The American Civil Liberties Union has come out and condemned this ruling, saying that she was exercising her right of free speech to send these text messages and that she should not be held responsible for this man's death. But this is, I think, but the first of many cases that we're going to see where these, unfortunately, these kind of incidents happen, and whether people can be held liable for other people's actions because of what they write online remains to be seen. I think it's going to be something that's hotly debated in the future.
Yeah, very complicated case.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Former German Chancellor Helmut Kohl dies at the age of 87. Djibouti says Eritrea has seized disputed territory. On the Run, Vietnam's most wanted green blogger tells VOA that he's safe, and Amazon inks a deal to acquire Whole Foods. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
If you want to look younger, a new study's advice is don't smile. While common knowledge suggests smiling exudes a more youthful appearance, research conducted by Ben-Gurion University provides scientific evidence that the opposite is true. The researchers gathered 40 university students and showed them images of people's faces with smiling, non-smiling, and surprised expressions. They were asked to rank them from youngest to oldest looking. The students rated smiling faces as the oldest, followed by images of non-smiling faces. Faces with surprised expressions were ranked as the youngest. The study suggests that smiling forms wrinkles around the eyes, making the person look older. On the other hand, someone making a surprised face pulls facial skin backward, eliminating those wrinkles. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, country singer Shania Twain releases her a new single. Well, more than 2 years after former President Barack Obama announced the process of normalizing relations with Cuba, President Donald Trump is expected to outline a tougher stance towards Havana today in Miami. Reports indicate Mr. Trump will impose travel and business restrictions. Earlier this week, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson told U.S. lawmakers, while there have been benefits to both Cubans and Americans from the restoration of diplomatic relations, there is what he called the dark side, where the communist regime of President Raul Castro has not changed its behavior or its treatment of its citizens.
All the prisoners are still locked up. All the opposition gets locked up. The ladies in white still get harassed. And there is no more freedom in Cuba today than there was before this opening. So we have four statutes on the books that govern our relationship with Cuba and the blockade. Our view is we're supposed to follow and enforce the law. So our approach is not to undo as much as possible the beneficial aspects to the Cuban people, to give them a better life. We want that. But the law says we are not to be facilitating or we're not allowing the financing or flow of monies to the regime.
Tillerson said that's occurring in Congress. Either must change the law or the Trump administration must act to be in compliance with the law. Cuba has been under a U.S. trade embargo since 1960. The director of the Institute for Cuban and Cuban-American Studies at the University of Miami, Jaime Suchlicki, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, in addition to travel restrictions, he expects the U.S. to limit remittances of money to Cuba. He also anticipates limits on companies Americans can do business with, given that 60% of Cuban firms are operated by the military.
But Cuba is not going to address human rights. Cuba, since the Obama changes, has become even more repressive, has been arresting dissidents. There's no desire on the part of the Cuban government to open up the political process or even the economic process anymore. Cuba remains an ally of Iran, Syria, Russia, Venezuela, and is not a friend of the U.S. So there's a limit to how much we can influence Cuban developments from the outside.
Was the Obama policy of opening ties a bad move?
It wasn't a bad move had it been followed by concessions from the Cuban government. But we didn't demand anything from the Cuban government. We made a number of concessions in the hope that Raul Castro will take on a more moderate position, which he has not done. So it's like all of a sudden we begin to offer concessions to the North Koreans in the hope that the North Korean regime is going to become friendly to the U.S. That's wishful thinking.
Raul Castro in his 80s, will anything change after he's off the scene?
First of all, he's not leaving power next year like some people have pointed out. He's leaving the presidency to a political hack, a party member that is not very important or very influential. He will remain as Secretary General of the Communist Party and as head of the armed forces. Power in Cuba rests in the political bureau of the Communist Party. These are 14, 15 people, mostly military, that make decisions and runs Cuba, and rests in the control that the military has on the economy. 60% of the big industries and businesses are in the hands of the military. Yes, once he dies, there'll be a new group but it may be like the Soviet Union, that is going to change very gradually from one leader to the other one until the system collapses. But it is not likely to collapse immediately once Raul disappears because of the control of the military, of the economy.
That's Jaime Suchlicki, director of the Institute for Cuban and Cuban-American Studies at the University of Miami. China's ambassador in Canberra has accused the media of creating a panic over Beijing's influence in Australia. In a speech, Chinese Ambassador Cheng Yingye labeled a story broadcast by Australia's ABC News as fabricated and politically motivated. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The Australian Broadcasting Corporation has alleged two Chinese businessmen who donated money to three of Australia's major political parties have links to the Chinese Communist Party. The ABC documentary aired earlier this month and claimed to uncover how China's Communist Party was secretly infiltrating Australia. The programme said Australia's main intelligence agency had warned that espionage and foreign interference are occurring here on an unprecedented scale, with the potential to cause serious harm to this nation's sovereignty, its security, and our political system. The story prompted other reports into suspected ties between Australian politicians and financial donors from China. The allegations have infuriated China's ambassador to Australia, Cheng Yingye, who accused media organisations of having wild and morbid imaginations. Speaking at an Australia-China Business Council meeting at Parliament House in Canberra, Cheng said the claims were groundless.
In Chinese, we call it cook up the overnight cold rice, which means repeating the same old stuff again and again. Maybe the producers of the program believe that those groundless allegations may turn to be truths after repeating thousand times. Their main purpose, as I see it, is to instigate China panic.
In the audience for Ambassador Cheng's uncompromising speech was Australian Foreign Minister Julie Bishop, who'd earlier this week been questioned by opposition lawmakers over Chinese donors to the governing Liberal Party. Bishop, however, made no reference to the controversy in her address, focusing instead on growing social and economic links between the two nations. China is Australia's biggest trading partner, and commercial ties between the two nations grow deeper every day. China's appetite for resources, most notably iron ore and coal, helped Australia avoid the worst of the global financial crisis. Analysts believe that as the mining boom fades, Australia's future prosperity depends on Chinese demand for its education and tourism services, as well as manufacturing and agricultural products. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
I'm Nilar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
In 2013, Shania Twain announced on Facebook she was working on new music. Since then, excited fans have been anticipating a new release from the queen of country pop. Finally, it looks like their wait is about to end. Nikki Strong of VOA One, The Hits, has all the details. So, Nikki, tell us about this project.
Well, we finally have a release date. Now, we've been getting release dates. They've been like teases, but this is the real McCoy. She was interviewed at the Stanley Cup, and she said she has a new single that's dropping June 16th. Well, it has hit the internet. So we're like, yes. And also the label confirmed. In the interview, she said it was going to drop late August. Well, the label has said it's going to drop September 29th, and people can now pre-order it. So this is real, folks. For a while, it's been like a tease. You know, it's back and forth. We know she's working on new music. Is it ever going to happen? But now it is here. And the song is great, the single. She said it was going to sound, her album was going to sound like her. So it is pop country. It's called Life's About to Get Good, which I think is a nice prediction for her and for everybody. It's positive, it's celebratory, and I think it's a hit.
Well, what took her so long? It's been over 10 years since her last studio release.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Up was her last one, and that was back in 2002. A couple of things. I mean, I knew she went and took a break, but then it wound up being longer than we all anticipated. She was diagnosed with dysphonia and then later on Lyme's disease.
Oh.
So, which threatened to take away her voice. So she really needed to take some time to get her voice and her body back together. And then she had to look for new producers as well. So that took some time. She said it was kind of like dating, you know? And because her ex-husband did much of the previous albums and the work. So now she had to find the producers whose work resonated with her and who could capture her voice. But apparently she found them.
Yeah. Well, she also did a huge successful tour in 2015 and said that would be her last one. Well, she changed her mind.
Yeah. Rock This Country also fueled our anticipation for her new album. And she initially envisioned it as a goodbye tour, like a final goodbye tour. But it really energized and inspired her. So now she has been talking about, since that tour, she's been talking about doing an international leg of it. And so initially, I've read that she was looking into 2017, but that could happen 2017 or 2018. Now that the album is about to be released, anything can happen. And Shania has a huge international fan base, so it would only make sense for her to tour internationally.
Probably be a lot of fun for her as well.
I think so. I'm excited. I want to hear the album. I want to see her tour. She's awesome.
Okay. Well, you can hear Shania Twain's new music on Country Hits with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also preview it on Facebook and Twitter at VOA 1 The Hits. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Oh, that's about joy.
And that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States strongly condemns the detention of peaceful protesters in Russia. On June 12th, tens of thousands of people took to the streets in cities across Russia, protesting official corruption and calling for democratic governance. The protest was organized by opposition leader Alexei Navalny, an anti-corruption campaigner who reportedly intends to run against Vladimir Putin in Russia's presidential election next year. Mr. Navalny himself was one of about 1,500 demonstrators arrested by authorities who claimed the protests were unlawful. At a midnight hearing, he was sentenced to 30 days in prison. In strongly condemning the arrests, White House spokesperson Sean Spicer said, "Detaining peaceful protesters, human rights observers, and journalists is an affront to core democratic values. The United States will monitor the situation, and we call on the government of Russia to immediately release all peaceful protesters." This is the second time mass anti-corruption demonstrations occurred in Russia in the last 3 months. In March, in scores of Russian cities, anti-corruption demonstrators, many of them young adults, protested the wealth reportedly amassed by Russian officials. Close to 1,000 protesters were arrested at that time, including Mr. Navalny, who had called for the public demonstrations. The United States condemned the detention of peaceful protesters by Russian authorities at that time as well. In both instances, the United States has made clear, as Mr. Spicer said after the most recent demonstrations, that the Russian people, like people everywhere, deserve a government that supports an open marketplace of ideas, transparent and accountable governance, equal treatment under the law, and the ability to exercise their rights without fear or retribution.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.